Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Sukkah Daf Lamed Vav. We left off on Daf Lamed Hey Amid Beis. We are at the two dots at Olsa Chazaz. It's about 12 lines before the end of the page. Today's share is sponsored by Dr. David Lander, in honor of his wife and children. We thank him very much for the sponsorship. So the first thing we're going to talk about, if it's also chazazes, you have an esrog that has some discoloration that comes on several parts of the esrog, if there's a difference between where it's in one spot or two or three different spots, when are we going to say that the esrog is going to be puzzle on account of also chazazes? Then we're going to discuss the rules of different holes in the esrog, and the Gemara is then going to raise a shaila: what if an esrog has simane trefa, that which would trefa up an animal? If this were to happen to a lung of an animal, if it happens on an esrog, what would the halacha be? Then the Gemara is going to discuss an esrog hakushi, and is whether it in fact is pasul for everybody, and whether it has to be dafka an esrog that comes from Kush, or an esrog that's domel kushi, that looks like an esrog that comes from Kush. Then the Gemara is going to talk about tiny esrogim, whether they can be used for dalad minim, and whether they're chayiv in maisos at all, whether it's considered a pri at all. And then on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to discuss what if a person comes up with a chap and he makes a mold of a perfect esrog with all the right bumps and everything, and he grows the esrog in the mold so that the esrog grows exactly the way you want it. So if a person shapes an esrog, what if he wants to get really creative and he shapes the esrog like different items that don't even look like an esrog at all? So he has an esrog, I don't know, shaped like an apple or a bicycle or something, I don't know, just something. So what's the halacha in such a case? The Gemara reports that Rabbi Chanina used to have the habit of taking a bite out of his esrog and then being yotze with that esrog. Why is that okay? The Gemara is going to wonder. Then the Gemara is going to tell us that the minimum size of an esrog relates to a minimum size of to the machlokas about the size of avanim mukorzalos, of the special stones that they used to use to bring to the Beis Hakiseh. Then the Mishnah on Amud Beis toward the end of the daf is going to talk about what to bind the lulav with, what items can be used to bind the lulav with. And the Gemara is going to elaborate on that a little bit. So let's begin again about 12 lines from the bottom of the page on Daf Lamed Hey Amud Beis. We are at Olsa Chazazis at the two dots. So Olsa Chazazis. Amrav Chesedomer Zer Rabbeinu HaGadol Amrav Makmi Yebezro. The following was recited, was stated by Rabbeinu HaGadol, and Hashem should help him. Lo Shanu Al B'makom Echal B'Shai V'Shoshim Mekom B'Kosher. That this whole din is only if it's in one spot. But if it's in two or three different spots, then it's going to be kosher. Meaning the whole problem of Olsa Chazazis is only if it's Olsa Chazazis on one location. But Olsa Chazazis all over the place, it's going to be cautious. I'm like, Rabbi Adraba, what do you mean? That's counterintuitive. B'shayim v'shoshim mekomos, I'm like a menumer, apostle. If it's all over the place in different spots, that would be a bigger problem, and that should be apostle. Eli'in marasefa itmar. No. There is a distinction to be made between one spot and multiple spots, but we're applying it on the wrong part of the Mishnah. It should go on the statement of the Mishnah, al mi'uto kasher, that if the chazaz is only on a mi'ut of the esrog, then it's going to be kosher. So Amar Rav Chista, Damar Zer Rabbeinu HaGadol Amar B'Makom Yabezro, that's where Rav Chista quotes from Rabbeinu HaGadol, that lo shanu ela b'makom echad, that when do we say it's kosher? That's only if it's b'makom echad, al b'shayim b'shosh m'komas av leke menumer apostle. But if it's in two or three different spots, then it becomes like it's menumer, it becomes like it's spotted, it's splotchy, and therefore that's going to be apostle. Amar Rav Aval Chotma afilu b'mashu nami apostle. And Rav just comments that if it's on the chotam of the esrog, then even if it's not over a large area on the chotam of the esrog, the top of the esrog, then even a small amount is going to be possible. There are like four different shittos in Rishonim exactly how do we define what the chotam of the esrog is, but it's somewhere toward the top, meaning it's a part of the esrog that you see most prominently when you look at your dalad minim. Now the idea that shnayim b'shosha mekomos is possible, because the Mishnah raises the question in the 8th paragraph of Hilchos Lulav, that why do you have to say shnayim b'shosha mekomos? If it's in two different spots, it's going to be possible for sure. In three different spots, that should be a psul. Why would it have to mention shlosh mekamos? So the Achronim are all deal with this question. The Taz on the side of the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tav Reish Mem Chesiv Katan Yadalit says, because if it only would have said shnayim and not shalosh, I would have thought that even if between the chazazios there's just a chuta sa'ara, there's just like one tiny strand in between these chazazios, that it should become possible. So that's why it says shlosha, because the only way you can have shlosha is if there's the two extremes have another one in between. So just like the distance between the two extremes is some reasonable distance. So too, when you have shnayim, it has to be some reasonable distance between them in order for it to be possible. The Taz doesn't elaborate what's reasonable, how much of a distance. The Prima Gadim wonders, like, well, is there some sort of shear over here? He says, chutas ara is not enough to count that as two makomos. That counts as one makom. It's mashal ma davidoma, like when paskening maros of nida. So when you have a kesem that's smaller than a grisva od, it's not going to be a problem. What if you have a kesem that's larger than grisva, larger than what we normally assume in American penny, some poskim say a nickel, whatever, larger than a grisva od, then it's going to be problematic. And what if it's two different stains? So they're separate stains, they're not connected to each other. So what's called connected, right? So the Taz say, like, a chutasara, you can't say, is going to be separate items. So the question is what the shear would actually be. The Prisha has a different understanding of why it says two or three. It says, coming to be Mechadesh, that even if the Chazaz is in three different places, it still has to be Mefuza Berubo in order to pasul. Meaning, you might think that once it's in three spots, even if they're all on a minority of the Esrog, let's say they're all on the bottom of one side of the Esrog, they're in one quadrant of the Esrog, so it doesn't really cover a majority of the Esrog, but it's three of them, so you might think three is just, it's too much, that it'll be possible. No, come tell me two and three of the same halacha, that it's only going to be a problem if between them they cover they're on different parts of the Esrog, that if you were to connect all of them, that would cover the majority of the Esrog. Karban Sanel suggests in Simon Yotes in Ozvav, based on Tosos, that the Gemara means Kedamri Inchi, Shnayim Shloshava Filu Tuva, that sometimes people use just the expression two, three, and it could be even more. Tosefus Reim just points out that you could say such a svara where it's lo zu avzu, right? Where it's not only this, even that, but over here it's zuvein sarach lomar zu. So it doesn't necessarily work to say shnayim u'shlosha and afilu tuva, because it's not afilu, it's ein sarach lomar. It's and of course tuva. So it's not clear that that would be the style of shas. The Sfasemis writes that since when Rav Chista, we had two versions of what Rav Chista was commenting on, whether he was commenting on the Reisha or commenting on the Seifa. So since initially, when the first version of Rav Chista, Shlaim Shosh Mekomos Kosher, so there's a, meaning the initial version was that it was going on the line of the Mishnah that said Pasul, and we said also Chazaz is Pasul, oh, but if it's a Shlaim Shosh Mekomos, it's going to be Kosher. So in that version, Shlosha is a bigger Chiddush than Shnayim. So when we flip it around in the end, and we say, no, he's telling me Shnayim Shosh Mekomos is Pasul, so Shnayim is the bigger Chiddush than Shlosha. So we just keep them both because each version has a different. That's probably the pashtus, right? That's the language that was employed throughout. The Arsameach suggests a Yisod that's definitely true Yisod. The question is whether the application over here is correct. But the Yisod is that Hadar is not something that is that's a davar muchlat. It's not something that's an absolute. Hadar is a term that, by its very definition, is a relative term. So he says, if you have only two esrogim, one of them has two chazazios, and the other one has three, you could be yotze with the one that has two chazazios, because klape, the one that has three, that's considered hadar. So that's why it says two or three, because depending on the circumstance, sometimes two is actually okay, because two is better than three. What if you have an esrog that's menumar, but it's only menumar because it's been handled so much? We discussed yesterday, an esrog gets handed around the whole shul, or different shuls even, a whole community, so the esrog's not going to look nice at the end of the day. So the Chasam Sofer has a famous comment over here in Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, where the Chasam Sofer writes, no, that's the most muhudur deke esrog. Meaning, like, if you ever see a shas on someone's shelf, right? So sometimes a person has a chasam shas, and you can tell from the time he's a chasam, he never used the chasam shas. So that's a nice shas. And then you have a shas that a person has used every day, and he goes and he's constantly flipping, and it's all worn out, the binding is all worn out, so which is more hadar, which is more beautiful? So the second one is obviously much more magnificent. So the Chasam Sofer says, when you have an esrog that's discolored because of all the mishmush yadayim, he says that's going to be the greatest hidur. And he says the ktsas rayel is What the Gemara in Pesachim, the Mishnah Pesachim says in Daf Samechay that it's a shevach the Bnei Aaron that Yelchol Adar Kvuseim Bedam, that they used to walk around on Erev Pesach, they would plug up the drainage system in the Beis Hamikdash on Erev Pesach when they brought all those karbanos dafka, so that the Bnei Aaron, the Kohanim, could be walking knee deep in blood. Knee deep in blood, that doesn't seem like a hiddur at all. They should try to keep everything as clean as possible. But no, look at how much avodah is being done, and that itself is the greatest hiddur. So that's the comment of the Chasam Sofer. Now, what's this phrase Hamakom Yeh BeEzro? So I saw in the back of the Masifta in the Panini Alecha section, he quotes from the Sefer Divrei Shalom that there, when we say the concept of Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the Pasuk in Mishlei, Gemara in Yuma, Darshan, you're supposed to, whenever you mention a Tzadik, you're supposed to be Zechrehu Levracha, you're supposed to mention him Levracha. It really means two different things. Number one, it means to let let it be known the Tzipkus and the Shavach of the tzaddik, like when you find by Noach, when the Torah mentions him, says he was a tzaddik tamin. So you should mention the shevach of the tzaddik when you mention his name, and in addition to that, you should also give him a bracha, like Hashem is mevarich Avram at the time that he mentions his name. So zecher tzaddik bracha means both of those things, to compliment him and to be mevarich the tzaddik. And he says that's what Rav Chis is doing in our sugya. Dover is that Rabbeinu Agadol Amro Hamakum Yeh Ba'azro. So when Chista says he's mentioning Rav, he mentions Rabbeinu Agadol, so that's a way of complimenting him, and then he gives a bracha, Hamakum Yeh Ba'azro, that Hashem should help him. That's the basis of the minhag, to always add after, you know, a title to a name of a tzaddik, like Harav, and then after we mention the name of the tzaddik, we say Shlita if he's alive, or Zatzal if he's no longer alive. And by the Rishonim, you find that they would say Sheyichya or Yud Sadivav, which means Yishmareu Tzureinu V'Yikaimeu, you know, some sort of bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should protect the person. And if you don't have that, if you don't add that, so then it's you're not fulfilling the Zecher Tzadik Levracha. In the Tshuvas Mari Mintz, and Rabbi Yishaya Pick in his Hakdama to the Perush of Sheila Shalom and the Shiltos, he writes it's unbelievable. It used to be that the printing costs were that. Why is it that in Judaism there's so many Rashi Tevis? Who writes like that? If you have words to say, just write the words. So it used to be that they tried to conserve as many spaces as they could because of printing costs. So in the Hakdama, he explains why he doesn't say Zatzal or Zechron Levracha about all the tzaddikim that he quotes in the Sefer, because he says, I'm trying to save money over here. And it was the easiest way to, you know, it's like if you're trying to, Lahavdil, you know, people who use Twitter, you know, you got to fit everything into a certain amount of characters. So you figure out Rashi Tevis how to say things in a slightly different way in order to fit it in. So I'm trying to save money over here. So what I cut out is the Zechron Levracha. I cut out the honorifics. And he quotes from the Sefer Hasidim that you don't have to say Zecher Tzadik Levracha when you're saying Divrei Torah in the name of a person. Meaning, have you ever heard anyone say Moshe Rabbeinu Zecher Tzadik Levracha? You know, or Aaron HaKohen Zecher Tzadik Levracha? It's obvious that it's a Zecher Tzadik Levracha. So when you're quoting Divrei Torah from someone, it's not necessary. And he says that Rabbi Shai Pick writes, and we find that Rashi and Tosfos, when they quote the names of Rishonim, they almost never say Zecher Levracha or Zatzal. The Smag, the Shach, the Sma, the Taz, Magen Avram, they almost never say Zecher Levracha or Zatzal, and there's some on this Sefer Hasidim. However, other poskim are not so happy about it. But there's also a discussion as to what exactly this bracha is. Hamakom Yeh BeEzro. Is that something you say when a person is alive, or is that something you say after a person is no longer alive? So the Bach, if you notice, in our sugya, took out a word in our sugya. It's a very strange word to take out. He took out the word lay. Now, Amar Lei Rava, that it's not Amar Lei, it's Amar Rava, that Rava didn't say it to Rav Chista, that about Amakom Yeh BeEzro. It's just Amar Rava. And that's what the Aruch Lener writes as well. And the reason they took it out is because they assume the bracha of Amakom Yeh BeEzro is only for a living person, that you mevakish that Hashem should help him out in all of his future endeavors. So he's got to still have future endeavors. It doesn't apply to someone who's nostalgic mina olam already. And since Rava was born on the day that Rav Yehuda was nifter, and Rav Yehuda himself was a Talmud of Rav, so Rava was not around when Rav was around. So he couldn't have spoken to Rav Chista when Rav Chista said about Rav, Hamakom Yeh BeEzro. Rav Chista must have said about Rav, Hamakom Yeh BeEzro, much earlier, before Rava was even born, when Rav was still alive. The Ra'ah seems to assume not that way. He says, saying Amakum Yabbe Ezra applies even after a person dies. It's a way of saying Zecher Tzadik Levracha. So our Girsa would work nicely. The Acharonim just point out that it's a Pella that the Aruch Lener himself in his Tshuvas Bin Yitzion, Chelek Aleph Siman Yudalid, writes Amakum Yabbe Ezra about the Chassam Sofer, and he dates the Tshuva, and the Tshuva is Shnas Taryag, Tof Reish Yud Gimel, and that way the Chassam Sofer died in Shnas Tof Reish. So the Bin Yitzion himself, who writes in the Aruch Lener that you would never say Amakum Yabbe Ezra for a dead person, you'd only say it for a living person, because it's a bracha that a person should continue accomplishing things, says it about he himself uses it about the Chassam Sofer 13 years after the Petira of the Chassam Sofer. This is a little bit of a pella that he would do that. Okay, so says the Gemara Vaita now. Natla Pitmasa, we said. So Tan Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar, Natla Bochanto. That he had a different phrasing, not Pitmasa, but Bochanto, like a pestle. It's probably referring to the same thing, but it's just a different language that he was referring to it with. Rashi has a couple of different interpretations, though, but not for now. Niklath, we then said if it was peeled. So Amra, the highest roga de iglit kaihinu sumka. If it was peeled like a red date, ksheira, va'anantra niklaf pasul. But the Mishnah doesn't say that. The Mishnah says that if it's niklaf, it's pasul. Lo kasha. Habakula habimuksasa. It depends if it's peeled bikula on the entire thing or only bimuksasa, only partially. Well, which is which? Is it better for it to be peeled entirely or peeled bimuksasa? Machlokas Rashi and Tosos. If you look at the top Rashi, bikula is kosher, bimuksasa is pasul diminumarhu. Right? It might be also somewhat counterintuitive, I would think. The more that's peeled, the worse it is. No, if it's entirely peeled, it's at least uniform. And when something is menumar, that's less hadar. So if it's b'miksasa, that's more problematic. Tosas and Dibra Maskel, habukula b'miksasa, writes, Pirush b'kutras miksasa pasul neksu k'menumar v'rabbeinu chananu pirush ibcha b'kula pasul dil trefos medami labishmaitin. We're about to compare the halachas of Esrog to the halachas of trefos. And milchus trefos, when it's entirely gone, that's a bigger problem. Gabi trefos ashkan perikel trefos hagaluda trefa v'mnishtayir b'kisela. If it has a kisela size that's still intact, then it's kshera, because then it could still heal. But if it's entirely removed, if the whole surface, the whole layer is entirely removed, then it's going to be a bigger problem than Ilchus Shevas, and Mimela, it's a bigger problem than Ilchus Esrog as well. Okay, top line, Nistak Nikav, so Tani Ula Barchanina. Ula Bar Chanina taught in the context of what the Mishnah said, that if you have a nekev where it's not chaser, you have a nekev, but it's not missing anything from the actual esrog, then it's going to be kosher. So in that context, he says, nekev nekev mefulash b'mashu, that if the hole goes all the way through, then even b'mashu, it's going to be a problem. But v'sheinu mefulash b'ki iser, if the hole doesn't go all the way through, then it's only a problem if it's the size of an isar, of a certain coin. So bay rava, noldu besuk simani trefa mahu. What if an esrog has simani trefa? So, Maikami Baile, what do you mean it has simani trefa? In what way can an esrog be a trefa? An esrog is not a living thing. So what does that mean? So in niklaf tanina, if you're talking about that it's peeled, we already learned in the Mishnah about that. In istak tanina, if you're talking about, you're asking a shayla, what if it's cracked? We already learned that in the Mishnah. In nikav, we're asking if there's a hole in it, tanina. We already learned that in the Mishnah. So what sort of new shayla are you raising that we didn't already cover in the Mishnah about an esrog? So kikami bayle kedu ula amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now he was asking a trefa similar to what Ula Amar Rabbi Yochanan taught, that Reya Shenishbucha Kikiton Ksheira, that the halacha is that lung that pours like a flask of water is kosher. Amar Rava Vud Kaima Simfona. And Rava says that that's only if the bronchial tubes are intact, but if they're not intact, then it's a sign of a trefa. What does that mean? Rashi in Chulin explains that the dissolving of the interior flesh is considered to be non-fatal. That's not enough to make it a trefa, as long as the air passages themselves within the lungs didn't dissolve, so the lung still has air passages within its membrane. So Rava's question is, when it comes to an esrog, what's the halacha if the flesh is dissolved, but the inner pockets that have the seeds in it are still intact? That would be the equivalent of the air passages inside of the lung. So halokai misim from a treifa, meaning if the bronchial tubes were not intact, then it would be a treifa. So hachamai, what would the halacha be by an esrog? Dilma hasam d'loshalad ba'avira hadabari. Maybe when it comes to the lungs, where the external atmosphere doesn't impact on it because the lung is enclosed within the body, so the avir of the outside world is not going to impact it at all. Maybe that's where it can heal again, and that's why as long as the bronchial tubes are intact, it's going to be okay. Aval hachba peinesu d'shal ba'avira, where it will be exposed to the atmosphere, sruche misrachas. So then it's just going to deteriorate, and it's never going to get better, and it's going to be a problem for an esrog. Or maybe the halachas are exactly the same when it comes to an esrog, and when it comes to hilchos treifos. So Tashma says, I'll bring you a raya. Esrog tafuach saruach. So the brisa that we're quoting is going to have a lot of different halachos, but we're really only going to focus at the answer to our question about the treifa is really only from the first line. But once we bring all these other halachos, we're going to discuss many of the other halachos as well that are mentioned in the brisa. You know, kedarka shall talmud bavli, like we always do. So tashma, if you have an esrog that is tafuach saruach, it is bloated, it is rotted, or kavush, it is soaked. Shaluk, it's slow cooked. Kushi, it's a black esrog. Lavan, a white esrog. Umenumar, a spotted esrog. Pasul, all of those are pasul. Esrog kikadur, if the esrog is like a kadur, it's shaped like a kadur, it's a round esrog, then pasul. V'yesham mafatiyum, some say even like a twin esrog. Esrog haboser, Rabbi Akiva posel v'chamim machshirin. If you have an esrog haboser, which Rashi says means it's katan kipul alavan, it's very tiny like a bean, then Rabbi Akiva says pasul v'cham say it's kosher. Gadlo b'tufus v'asokimin bria acheres, pasul. If you grow it in a mold and it grows to look like some other min, something else other than an esrog, it's going to be pasul. So why are we quoting this whole brisa? Because katani miyas tafuach saruach. The very first halach we mentioned in the brisa is if it's bloated or rotted. So my love tafuach mi b'chutz saruach mi b'fnim. Doesn't that mean it's talking about the same thing? It's tafuach and saruach, and it means that it's bloated on the outside, but it's saruach mi b'fnim, which means that the klipa is still intact. So it's just like a lung that pours like a flask, which we raised the shaila about. It's exactly like the treifa lung. So lo edi mi bachutz. No, not like the treifa lung, a kshera lung. That as long as its bronchial tubes are intact, it's still going to be kosher. And yet we're saying by an esrog in such a condition, it's going to be pasul. So says we're lo edi vidi mi bachutz. No, we're not talking about anything is mi b'fnim. Nothing happened on the inside of the esrog. Everything's on the outside. V'lo kasha tafachav gavdol sarach hadasarach havagadol tafach. These are just two different conditions describing the outside of the esrog, meaning we're not saying one case of tafuach saruach. It's tafuach, kama, saruach. If either one of these things happened to the outside of the esrog, it's going to be possible. But ein achinami, maybe when it comes to the inside of the esrog, if it's nishpach kiton, but the chedrei azera, the place where the seeds are still intact, maybe ein achinami, that's going to be kosher, just like you'd have by the lung of an animal. It is interesting that among the halachos in the brisa, we said that if it's that an esrog kikadur is possible. The Rambam quotes every halach in the brisa except for that one. It's unusual that he would just leave out one of the halachos in the brisa. The Magen Mishnah says that it could be that he's being somech on what he says that on the other halacha that aso kedufus kamin bria acheres. And if you make it kedufus, you make it in a mold, and it looks like something other than an esrog, so that's pasul. So that's the same as kadur. So the Kapos Smarim points out it's a very shvera yishuv for the Rambam, because first of all the Brisa apparently thought you need to say both of those things. So why would the Rambam think you don't need to say both of those things? Second of all, kikadur doesn't mean you shaped it like a kadur; it means it was naturally shaped like a kadur. There's a big difference between shaping the esrog by growing it in a mold the way you choose to shape it and having it grow kikadur. So the Aruch Lener writes that the Rambam must have had a different girsa. He must have had the girsa of Tosfos that it's not kikadur but it's kidud. And he says that kidud is a reference to the color, that a kettle is black. So it's talking about an esrog that's very blackened like a kettle. And therefore the brisa compares an esrog, a blackened esrog, to a dud. So in the brisa, why does it have to mention kushi and dud? So that's the difference like between kushi Kushi and Domil Kushi, which we're going to have soon. But maybe that's why the Ram doesn't mention, because he does talk about a blackened Esrog, so he doesn't have to mention the Esrog Kikadur, because there is no such thing as Esrog Kikadur. Okay, Amar Mar, so now we're going to discuss that very halacha that we just mentioned, of Kushi and Domil Kushi. So he said an Esrog Kushi is possible. If you have an Ethiopian Esrog, it's possible. Vatanya Kushi Kasher Domil Kushi possible. But didn't we learn that an actual Ethiopian Esrog is Kasher? It's only if you have an Esrog that grows in Eretz Yisrael, let's say, but it looks like a Kushi Esrog, only that's going to be puzzle. So Rabbi Kitanan, I must listen, Domelukushi Tanan. So Rabbi says, you know what? You're right, that only if it's Domelukushi it's going to be puzzle. If you have an actual Esrog Kakushi, it's Kasher. But if you have an Esrog that grows elsewhere, that's Domelukushi, that's where it's going to be, to be problematic. Right, Rashi explains, Kushi means that it grows in Eretz Kush and it's Kasher. Domelukushi means that it grows in Bavel or Eretz Yisrael, but its color is Kikushi and it's going to be puzzle. So according to Rava, even and Rava Amar, let's see, Rava says Rava Amar Lo Kasha Halan VaHalahu. It depends who you're speaking for. That whether it's for the Bnei Eretz Yisrael or the Bnei Kush. That if you look in the second line of Rashi, second wide line of Rashi, the other Masnis and Kushi Nami Pasul. The Mishnah would say even a real Asruka Kushi is Pasul. Lo Kasha Masnis and the Bnei Eretz Yisrael Shor Chalkin Eretz Kush. We those who live in Eretz Yisrael that are very far away from Kush and Neveinim Regilim Behem, they're not used to seeing a struggle like that, so that's going to be puzzle because it looks weird, it looks unusual, and anything that looks strange is not going to be hadar, is not going to be a nice esrog. But the brisa, the Bnei Bavel shekrovim laKush, it's talking to the Bnei Bavel who live closer to Kush, and therefore they're used to seeing this kind of fruit. But when we come up on begadol kan v'dom laKushi nidmuhu puzzle. But if you have an esrog that is just that's an unnatural esrog, that for sure is going to be puzzle. But even an Esrog Kakushi itself, it will depend on whether you're accustomed to seeing an Esrog Kakushi or you're not accustomed to seeing an Esrog Kakushi. That's what it seems like. The Osameach in Hilchos Lulav just adds that the very Inyan of Hadar, like we mentioned before, the big Yisod, that the Inyan of Hadar itself is not an Inyan Mukhlat. It's not something that's an absolute term, that something is beautiful or not. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and a lot of it is based on societal expectations, what you're used to seeing and what you're used to, what looks ordinary and what looks out of the ordinary. So it's Talib Bidas B'nei Adam. So therefore, in Eretz Yisrael, Kushi is Eino Hadar. But in Babel, in Esrog Kushi is Hadar. Because in Eretz Yisrael, they were not accustomed to seeing it. So it looks strange. Everyone would say, that's such a weird Esrog. But in Babel, everyone would say, oh, okay, so he's got a Kushi Esrog. So everyone was accustomed to it. And therefore, it doesn't lack Hadar. Esrog HaBoser, Rabbi Akiva Posel V'Cham Makshirin. We said an Esrog HaBoser, Rabbi Akiva says it's pasul, and the Chum says it's kosher. Amar Rabba, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon, Amar Dover Echad. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon are saying the same thing. Rabbi Akiva da Amran, Rabbi Akiva says is what we said about the Esrog HaBoser. Rabbi Shimon Mayhi, where does Rabbi Shimon say about a similar type of idea, a tiny Esrog? So what does it change it to? The Tanan, the Mishnah says that Rabbi Shimon poter Esrog and Bekotanan, that in talking about Hilchos Shumas and Maisos, Rabbi Shimon says that if an Esrog is very tiny, it's part from Shumas and Maisos. Apparently, both Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shimon hold that an Esrog that's very, very tiny isn't really an Esrog. So therefore, there are two Nafkaminas. One Nafkamina of it not being an Esrog is you can't use it for Dalaminim, and the other is that it's not a Pri, so it's not Chayiv in Maisos. But they're really saying the same Yisod. It's two totally different Halachas in totally different areas of Halacha. One in Hilchas Dalaminim and the other in Hilchas Shumas and Maisos, but it's based on the same idea. It's just that it's not an Esrog when it's so tiny. So I'm Rabbi Yidil Malohi. No, maybe they're not really connected at all. It's not the same Yisod that did. Maybe Rabbi Kiva says it is an Esrog, it's just on Hadar, and that's why you can't use it for Dal and Minim. But maybe Rabbi Kiva would say it is an Esrog, and therefore it is going to be Chayiv and Maestros, and Inami, or one might suggest, Rabbi Shimon Asam, El Dixiv, Aser Taseres, Kaltavas Aracha, Kederk Shemnei Adam Otsi Lizria, that the mitzvah of Maestros is only if it's something significant. But maybe over here, you don't like the Rabbanan, that you can use it for Dal and Minim, because there is no such din of something significant when it comes to an Esrog. Just has to be an Esrog, the Sulamidi, and therefore there's nothing else to discuss. It could very well be that these two issues are not at all related to each other. We then said that if you grow the esrog in a mold and you shape it like something else, because you have this mold that's shaping the esrog to look like some other thing, then it's going to be possible. So let's say you grow it in a mold, but you know you're not into shtick. You don't want it to make the esrog look like a pear or something like that. You want to make the esrog look like an esrog, but the most beautiful esrog. So instead of it, you've been noticing that the esrogim that you've been growing have been way too smooth, and you want them to have nice bumps and to be more symmetrical or whatever. So you put a tefus around it of the perfect esrog, and you grow it in that way. So that is going to be kosher. So pshita kamin bria cheres tnan. Of course, that's going to be kosher. After all, the brisa did say kamin bria cheres. So that's the only time it's going to be problematic. So says Mar Latzricha da avida dapi dapi. If you made it dapi dapi, which apparently is a way of making an esrog, Rashi explains, you make it like planks. Come in, crush him, ken galgal shel rechayim shel mayim, like a water mill that has the spokes of the wheel are like these planks, and the esrog is shaped in that way, that you might say, that doesn't look so much like an esrog. That looks somewhat unnatural. Kamash Mulan, it's close enough to a natural looking esrog. So the principle everyone agrees to. The principle is that if it looks like some other fruit, it's no good. If it looks like an esrog, it is good. The question is where you draw the line, right? What's realistic for an esrog? So that's what it's telling us, that if you make it come in dapi dapi, that's still going to be kosher. Itmar. So that's the end of that. So itmar. Esrog shenikvu achbarim. If you have an esrog that achbarim had made holes in the esrog, that mice bit holes into the esrog. Samarav ein ze hadar. That's not hadar. How can you say it's not hadar just because it's missing some pieces? After all, Rabbi Chanina used to dip his esrog, take a bite out of it, and then be yotzei his mitzvah with that esrog. So how can you say that it's not hadar? So says Rabbi Chanina, kasher masnisin. What's Rabbi Chanina going to do with the Mishnah? The Mishnah says it can't be chaser. So how could Rabbi Chanina be yotzei? So bishlam and masnisin, Rabbi Chanina lo kasher. The Mishnah is not going to be such a problem for Rabbi Chanina. Can't be yom tov rishon, can't be yom tov sheni. The Mishnah is saying it can't be chaser. That's only on yom tov rishon. Rabbi Chanina wouldn't eat his esrog, wouldn't take a bite out of it until yom tov sheni. So then, by then, it's going to be fine. El Rav kasha, but the din of hadar is something that you need for all 7 days. So according to Rav, it's going to be a problem. If Rav says that it's not hadar when it's missing a piece, how could Rabbi Chanina eat from the esrog and then use it on days 2 through 7 of Sukkot? So Amalak Rav shayni achbarim demi isi. No, Rav says it's not hadar, not because it's missing a piece, but of how it's missing a piece. It's because of the fact that mice ate from it. So that's disgusting, and that's not hadar. Again, hadar is not an absolute term. Hadar is a relative term, and that's considered ma'us be'enei b'nei adam. Igadami, another version of this conversation was that Amar Rav ze hadar, that even if a mice bit into it, don't worry, it's still hadar, because Rabbi Chanina used to bite into his esrog and be yotzei with it. I, Rabbi Chanina, kasher masnisin. In this version, we just asked, but wait, Rabbi Chanina is against the Mishnah. The Mishnah says if it's missing a piece, it's no good. Lo kasher, can be yom tov rishon, can be yom tov sheni. And we resolve it by saying the difference between yom tov rishon and yom tov sheni, then yom tov rishon, it's no good, but yom tov sheni, it's going to be good. What an odd practice, though, for Rabbi Chanina to have, to be taking a bite out of his esrog. So Miri wonders, like, why? Why would he do that? Meaning, isn't there at least a pagam in the mitzvah? And also, you're not allowed to eat before Netilas Lulav unless there's some sort of onus, right? You have a mitzvah to do in the morning. First mitzvah you do, you do the mitzvah before breakfast. So you got to take Lulav first. The way that the describing is, he would take a bite out of his esrog, and then he would take Lulav. I mean, Chassidus thing before davening, you know, to have a bite to eat. So the Chassidus wasn't invented yet, right? So what does that mean? What does it mean that he was taking a bite out of his esrog before even being yotzei the mitzvah? So the Meiri suggests that what must be is that Rabbi Chanina had a lot of esrogim, and one of them he would be mevarich on each morning, and throughout the day he would take other esrogim as well, and some of the other esrogim that he was carrying throughout the day he would take a bite out of, because the Gemara tells us that was the minhag of the Chassidim, that they would have all day long, they would have lulavim biyadeim, they would carry around their lulav all day long. So that's what Rabbi Chanina must have done. He must have carried around his lulav and esrog all day long, and when he would take mistama, when he took an esrog to be mevarichan, he would take a shalim, because the lehidur mitzvah, he would not use a chaser. But we're talking about the esrog that he carried around as a midas chasidus, so he wasn't so makbid about that one. But if it would have been puzzle, if a chaser is actually puzzle, then it's not even fulfillment of the midas chasidus. I mean, to walk around with a puzzle esrog all day long is not even, there's got to be some kiyum in carrying that esrog around. If there's no kiyum whatsoever, so then it's nothing. That's what Rav Shachter told us when he did that gemara about the chasidim and Anshei Meisen used to carry around the love all day long. Rav Salvechik used to say, what is this, a ceremony? That was a dirty word in Rav Salvechik's language. A ceremony? We don't believe in ceremonies. We believe in a kiyum mitzvah. The empty ceremonies, that's for other religions. We don't, if there's no kiyum, then it's nothing. Then it's worthless. So it has to be that there's some sort of kiyum mitzvah. So that's the Gemara's raya, that it must be its kiyum mitzvah. Otherwise, so therefore it must be kasher, even if it's chaser. Otherwise, he went to carry it around the rest of the day. Esrog katan. So Amar Rav bar Papa, machlokes kan kach machlokes b'avanim u'krizalos. The same machlokes about the minimum size of an esrog, you have a similar machlokes by the size of avanim u'krizalos. The tanya b'shabes gimel avanim u'krizalos mutzalachas beis hakisei. Three of these smooth stones you're allowed to bring into the beis hakisei. V'kamashi uran. And what's the size of these stones that you bring into the beis hakisei for wiping? Rameir omer ke'egos rabid omer kebeit. So you see, it's the same size. Are these halachas related to each other at all? It doesn't seem that they're related at all. It's just an easy way to remember that it's the same shear. So if you happen to remember the shear of an esrog katan, you'll remember the shear that we give for avanim u'krizalos of also being kegels, also being kebetza. Obegadol kadei shiyochas. And we said then the largest size, the maximum size of an esrog, so we had a machlokas in the Mishnah. Do you have to be able to hold two in one hand? Or even achas b'shtei adayim, even if you need two hands to hold one. So Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yossi, one time Rabbi Akiva came to shul and he was lugging an esrog on his shoulder. It was such a giant esrog. That's not a raya because you have to know the end of the conversation. Rabbi Akiva brought such an esrog to the Beis HaKnesses. Everyone said to him, not okay, you shouldn't have such an esrog. A Talmud Chacham like you should have a nice esrog. And that's not hadar. So it's not a raya that it's appropriate to bring such an esrog. Okay, says the Mishnah now, Ein ogdinas lulav ella bimino. When you bind the lulav, you have to use the min of the lulav. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rameir omer afilu b'chut b'mashicha. Even with like a linen thread, you can bind the lulav, which is not obviously the min of the lulav. Amar Rabbi Meir, Ma'is about Yerushalayim, she'ognes lulavim b'gimonio shel zahav. That the Anshei Yerushalayim used to bind the lulav with gimonio shel zahav, with golden strands. They would bind the lulav. Obviously, that's not the min of the dalad minim. So Amar Lo b'mino ayognes milamata. So the Chum said no, but they would have the min of the lulav milamata, and only after that would they bind the lulav with the gimonio shel zahav. Rashi writes that it was b'mino l'shem mitzvah. And then the Gemara Shel Zav Mila Milo were only Lenoi and Lahechsher Mitzvah, and that's why it's not a violation of Bal Tosif, because it's obviously not the Kavanas HaMitzvah. It was only Kavanah for Noi, for beautifying, for decorating. Sfasema says, you see from Rashi, a riot to the Shitas HaRash, that the Rash brings a riot from the Mishnah over here, that even if you say that if you take a fifth min, Bizmana Mitzvah, it's a violation of Bal Tosif, and even if you take it Stam, without the specific Kavanah L'Shem Mitzvah, that it's a violation. But if you mechavin by taking the fifth min, that it's l'shem noi, that's not a violation of Bal Tosif. And this is based on the idea that even though mitzvah tzrichas kavana, let's say, maybe having, or mitzvah tzrichas kavana rather, even not having kavana for the mitzvah is enough to make something part of the mitzvah, and therefore part of the Bal Tosif of the mitzvah. But if you're having kavana not to use it for the mitzvah, then it's you're having specific kavana not to use it for the mitzvah, then it doesn't become part of the mitzvah. So over here, you're having specific kavana not to use it for the, it's only l'noi. Your kavana is for some other purpose. It's a kavana l'noi. It's not just a stam kavana. And therefore, it's going to, it's not going to be a violation of Bal Tosif. That's what the Sfasemis writes, that you see very clearly from this Rashi over here, that when something is l'noi, it's not going to be a violation of Bal Tosif. Amar Rava, afilu b'siv, afilu b'ikra didikla. When we say that you need to use the min of the lulav to bind the lulav together, you can even use the ivy that grows around the trunk of the palm tree, or you can even use the bark of the palm tree itself to bind the lulav together. Tosfos just points out, siv ikra didikla, this is a kasha on what Rashi writes in the second paragraph of Pesachim. Because when we talk about in the Mishnah Daf Lamed Tes and Pesachim about the vegetables that you can be yotze the mitzvah of Marah with on Pesach, it mentions charchavina. And the Gemara says, atzavsa didikla. And Rashi writes, it's the siv hadekel that grows around the dekel tree. Over here, it sounds like the siv that grows around the dekel tree is part of the dekel tree. And Marah needs to be from Minzera, cannot be from Yerukos, it cannot be from a tree. So something's off in terms of how we identify what this ikra didikla really is. V'yomer Rava, my time at Rabbi Yehuda. What's the basis of Rabbi Yehuda's shita that it's got to be b'mina lulav? Because some lulav tzarech haged v'maisa mina achrina have a chamisha mini. Because he holds that lulav is tzarech haged, and if you bring another min, then it's going to be five minim in the lulav instead of four minim in the lulav, and that's going to be problematic. V'yomer Rava mina amina lulav d'siv ikra didikla mina d'lulav. How do I know that siv and ikra didikla are considered the min of the lulav? T'tanya basukas teishu sukas shall call davar divra meir. Rabbi Yehuda amar in sukanogas al bedal minim shabalulav. That Rabbi Meir says you could make a sukkah out of anything as long as it's kidula karka not mekabel tuma. And Rabbi Yehuda says no, you can only use the four minim of the lulav to make your sukkah. But did no say, and it's logical to say that way. Ma lulav shein noig belelus could be yam minu agel barbas minim sukas shnoigus belelus could be yam minu din shlotei al barbas minim. That if sukkah which applies, if lulav which applies only during the daytime, and we're still so specific it can only be these dalaminim, sukkah, which is all the time, so it's a more important mitzvah l'chara, because it applies throughout day and night, so we have to be even more particular that it should only be made from these dalaminim. You know, we'll pick up with that conversation again. Baruch Hashem, we'll start that conversation again tomorrow. Okay, have a good day, everybody.